Football Weekly Podcast is back, previewing Week 9 and discussing all the big news from a crazy week in the NFL with the trade deadline, some quarterback switches. There's a lot to get to. I am your host, Arthur Arkish. I am joined this week by Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly. Eric Edholm is getting a pass. He had another show and some stuff going on the home front. So we are happy to call into the bullpen and get Hub on board. Hub, what's happening?
Kind of like Clayton Kershaw coming out for four scoreless innings. I don't know about that. Didn't work out so well for Kershaw either, I guess.
Yeah, as you said, maybe they should have had Darvish or went straight to Morrow, but didn't work out as right. Kind of hard to can you hang that on Dave Roberts? I don't know. It wasn't very controversial going into the evening.
Bottom line is that Hugh Darvish has questioned his reputation as being an October pitcher. He's going to get a big payoff in free agency, but he did not have a great postseason.
And yet Hub and I saw him stifle the Cubs in the NLCS at Wrigley, but who didn't stifle the Cubs in the NLCS? So anyway, you guys are here to hear football discussion. So again, thanks for being with us on the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. If you haven't done so already, make sure you're subscribed to us over at iTunes. Leave us a rating and review while you're there. And also check out our great sponsor at LootCrate.com. Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Hub, Brock Osweiler is the new Broncos starting quarterback. Does that qualify as a surprise, a scare, all of the above? What does Vance Joseph do from here now that he has given Trevor Siemian the hook?
Well, there's nothing surprising about it, only because Trevor Siemian, I have been saying since training camp, is not the answer, and particularly over the last 3 weeks, really 4 weeks, he's been just awful. Paxton Lynch isn't healthy enough. That
right.
left Brock Osweiler. What is shocking is that Brock Osweiler is a Denver Bronco again, and we got over that during the preseason when Lynch got hurt, mm-hmm. and he was available, and they went out and signed him. So it is obviously the right move right now, and people now have to remember, forget. You know, I don't really understand why Bronco Nation was so upset with Brock Osweiler. He got $32 million guaranteed. The Broncos weren't offering him that kind of money, and so, mm-hmm. you know, he took
actually, I think the Broncos did offer him $32. He took $37, right?
Yeah, whatever it was. He got millions
yes.
more, I think,
yes,
is the
did.
Point. And that's the name of the game. I think every player in the NFL should take every penny he can get, wherever he can get it, because Lord knows they pay a price physically, and we wonder what's going to happen afterwards. That didn't work out in Houston. It didn't work out in Cleveland. Now he's back in Denver. This is where he had some success. The Denver Broncos would not have their third Super Bowl ring if it wasn't for Brock Osweiler. The way he played down the stretch while Peyton Manning wasn't able to go is what got them to the Super Bowl in the first place. He
right.
beat the New England Patriots, for Lord's sake. You know, so
the Texans may not have Deshaun Watson if it wasn't for Brock Osweiler.
Yeah.
Circle.
It's crazy how the whole thing worked out. So I think now he gives them a better chance to, in my estimation, mm-hmm. he gives them a better chance to win than Trevor Siemian. But he's not the only problem. The offensive line is a disaster area.
Right.
They tried to rebuild it during the offseason. It hasn't worked out well. It is good enough to get the running game going sometimes. Even there, after that last game, I wonder if Devontae Booker is the best
right.
option. C.J. Anderson, we're not seeing as much Jamal Charles. There's a lot to figure out in Denver. And quite frankly, I'm not sure that Brock Osweiler is among their top three problems.
Well, if the shock is that Brock Osweiler is a Bronco again, then the scare is that he will make his first start of 2017 in Philadelphia against that Eagles defensive front against the behind the offensive line with which you just alluded to. So it's not the Brock Osweiler podcast and it's not the Browns podcast, but we should mention, since everyone seems to be piling on the Browns this week, deservedly so, and we will too in a couple minutes here, let's start by saying Brock Osweiler is going to earn almost $1 million Sunday to start for the Broncos. He's going to get that $1 million from the Browns. So it never ends for that Cleveland organization, does it, Hub?
No, it's really stunning, you know, if you're paying attention as to how screwed up they are.
It's almost not funny. I feel bad for Browns fans.
No, there's nothing funny about it. And I feel horrible for Browns fans, who are some of the best in the National Football
right.
League, and they deserve better. And what's intriguing to me is that the owner, Jimmy Haslam, isn't taking the beating he deserves. You know, you've got such a clown show in that front office with Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta, and Hugh Jackson's doing a lousy job. Sorry, I got nothing against the man personally, but let me have told you this story. I was talking to another retired NFL head coach about a week or two ago, and I just posed the question, all right, coach, you've got an NFL roster and you play 22 games. Couldn't you win more than one with pretty much any roster in the NFL? He said, absolutely. If you can't win three or four or five, you don't belong coaching in the NFL. And so this is not all on the front office.
Right.
It's a mess there. But at the end of the day, the head coach, the front office, that's all the responsibility of the owner. And Haslam's been underground. Nobody's seeing him. Nobody's hearing from him. We don't know what's going on there. Now, I don't know, and I should do some homework on this, and I'm going to this week. I believe he's still under federal indictment. I don't know whatever happened with that. He was definitely indicted. The kickback scheme on oil rebates from his flying pilot or flying J or whatever it is. I don't know if that's resolved or not. But at the end of the day, his football team is an embarrassment. And if there was a way for the other 31 owners to take it away from him, I think they should. That's not going to happen. And so he needs to wake up and get somebody in there who knows what they're doing.
So the trouble is that the Haslams haven't earned the benefit of the doubt or close to it to identify the right people, obviously, to get in there that know what they're doing. Clearly, it isn't the trio of Harvard men who bungled the potential A.J. McCarron trade and, of course, hired Hugh Jackson, and they've done nothing but fight since. So do you have any background on the A.J. McCarron trade and what exactly happened? Because there was like 15 different stories, and all we know for sure is that A.J. McCarron is still a Bengal and that Hugh Jackson desperately wanted him to be a Brown.
Yeah, just to be clear, Jimmy Haslam brought in DePodesta and Brown and Jackson to clean up the last clown show he started.
Right.
So, you know, there's no way that he deserves any benefit of the doubt. Yes, apparently what happened in the trade is that Sashi Brown and Duke Tobin were talking and agreed on the deal about 20 minutes before the deadline. Now, the way the process works is the two teams confirm with each other, and then each team confirms the trade with the league office. Now, our understanding is that Tobin got his confirmation to the league office with about 8-10 minutes to spare. Apparently, Sashi Brown asked his assistant, his number two guy, whose name is escaping me right now, to take care of the Browns end, and he carbon copied the Bengals on their agreement with the trade. He was carbon copied on the note from Brown to Tobin on the trade. The Bengals didn't know who he was, didn't open the email, and didn't know that the Browns weren't notifying the league office themselves. At the end of the day, this is completely on the Browns. It was up to them to notify the league office, not to expect the Bengals to do it for them.
Right.
They finally got it in about 5 minutes after the deadline, and the office said no.
That's the epitome of Bush League stuff. If you really want a quarterback, if you really want to kind of put it all out there and try and solve your, the biggest puzzle probably in the NFL, the Browns quarterback position, then you got to earnestly get that deal done, which the Browns failed to do.
And nobody's even focused on the biggest embarrassment of all.
A second and a third.
The trade, if it had been made, would have been worse.
That's where I was going next.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. You're right. It's a good segue. We're clearly kind of reading each other's minds here. It almost feels like Sashi was slow to the button. I don't know the better way to put it. Was kind of he was caught with his pants down and saw that the Niners got a really good deal with Garoppolo, and then it almost seemed like he made a deal in desperation and I'll throw a third in to sweeten the pot too for a quarterback who's not as good of a prospect, I don't think, in anyone's estimation as Jimmy Garoppolo.
A.J. McCarron is not in the same paragraph with Jimmy Garoppolo. Forget the same sentence or, same line. Just as a prospect. We don't know how these guys are going to work out.
And he looked okay in his pinch-hitting duty when Dalton was hurt 2 years ago and actually had them on the verge of a playoff victory. But I agree. In terms of overall skill set and tools to work with, he's nowhere near Garoppolo.
He may eventually prove to be a good starting quarterback in the league. Nobody's saying he's not. The last guy who should take any heat in this is A.J. McCarron. Poor guy got stuck in the middle of this. But this is so easy to evaluate. The Browns and the Niners are going to pick 1 and 2 next year. That second-round pick that the Niners gave to the Patriots is identical to the pick that the Browns were trying to trade for a lesser prospect, and they were going to throw in a third-round pick to boot? It's absurd. It's just absolutely absurd.
So, and we'll move on soon, and I should remind everyone, we're here on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. He's Hub. I'm Arthur. Dan Mott is producing this show for us here at the WCIU studios, where we just finished taping this week's TV show. And I should, tell everyone to make sure you go to ProFootballWeekly.com today or whenever you listen to this podcast, and check out Eric Edholm's column on the Browns debacle. It's excellent stuff, and it's well worth your time to sit down and read. Hub, Eric alluded to the possibility, and it's more than a possibility. We know that Sashi Brown and Hugh Jackson and the coaching staff in the front office are clearly at odds. Is there a chance that the front office sabotaged this intentionally because they weren't as sold on A.J. McCarron as Hugh Jackson?
Well, I don't think so, because it's the front office's call. Hugh Jackson doesn't have that kind of pull. I mean, they claim they value his
input. Yeah, but the report, I'm sorry, Hub, the report I read, and I apologize because I don't know where it came from. I've read it from a couple spots now, though, is that Jimmy Haslam signed off on this McCarron deal because he saw that Hugh Jackson needed more talent to work with, and because we all know Hugh Jackson is a dead man walking with 8 games left to go anyway.
Well, and honestly, Arthur, there's another report out there that suggests that Haslam may be the guy who pulled the plug on the trade.
Okay.
And caused it. So I just
that's the trouble with this story.
I don't know which report to believe, but we do know how it got screwed up. And and quite frankly, none of these reports make sense because the Browns had another option. Instead of having an email screw up to embarrass them, they just called Tobin back and said, we changed our mind. Yeah. We're not filing it with the league office. So, you know, I've heard both of these reports. And while I'm not saying that one of them isn't true, it doesn't make much sense if you think it through. This was not the best way to pull the plug on the trade if that's what you were going
to
do.
And just to be clear, we want to make sure we give credit where it's due. Mary Kay Cabot has been on this story at, what is it, at the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Excuse me, and Jim Osarski, our friend, a friend of the podcast over at Cincinnati.com, I believe initially had the reported compensation in this deal that obviously never ended up going through. So,
And let's just add, nobody is disputing that that's what the compensation was.
Right. Yeah, so good work from our friends over at the Plain Dealer and Cincinnati.com. And Hub, let's spend a minute on Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers and get past the, well, I guess we'll start with the compensation. I think we're both in agreement that it seems pretty reasonable, although there's a lot of risk involved, although Garoppolo has 8 games left on his rookie deal, and there's either going to be a franchise tag hung here or, the you know, I'm curious about the framework of what a new deal would look like, considering he hasn't done anything on the field to earn it yet. But just your thoughts on this dynamic. You got the Shanahan-Lynch power duo with the 6-year contract extensions, and the 49ers, of course, made a corresponding move and cut Brian Hoyer, and saw enough of C.J. Beathard in 6 quarters to know they needed to go take their shot at a franchise guy right now.
Well, it's a very different deal, and in many respects it points out why the Patriots are the best team in the league and the Browns are the worst, because when we say the compensation was fair, we have to report honestly that the Patriots could have gotten more if they had dealt Garoppolo prior to the draft. As a matter of fact, we have every reason to believe they could have gotten that 12th pick in the first round from the Browns if they had been willing to part with Garoppolo, or again, minimally have gotten more than what they're getting. At the time, they still believed that Jimmy Garoppolo might be their quarterback of the future. They knew Tom Brady was the guy this year, but had no idea what to expect. They knew they were facing the final year of his deal. They made several attempts to get an extension done, weren't able to. The season went on. Things have developed. The landscape changes. And they now see, number one, that there's no way they're going to win a Super Bowl this year, maybe next year with Garoppolo. Only Tom Brady is a guy who can do it because of some of the other things that haven't worked out with this roster.
Right.
And number two, the way that Brady is playing, they can no longer argue with him that he may not give them 2 or 3 more seasons after this year. And so to pay Garoppolo like a starter to sit on the bench for 2 or 3 more seasons made no sense. There'll be plenty of other great prospects coming along. Had they not made the deal at the deadline when they did, he was going to walk as a free agent and they were going to get nothing.
Oh, yeah, the Patriots had to do it.
Yeah, so when you lay out the entire landscape, yes, the compensation is fair. For the 49ers, the compensation is more than fair, because if they had tried to do this deal at draft time, they would have had to, they weren't going to give up the number 2 overall pick, but they might have had to trade that pick to get another number 1. They weren't going to get them as inexpensively as they did. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo, what do we really know? He was a fascinating second-round draft choice out of Eastern Illinois. Bill Belichick does like him. There's no dispute about that. And I got to watch him in training camp for 3 days, not this season, but last season. And then we saw the game and a half start he had before the unfortunate injury. He definitely looks like he is as good a prospect as Deshaun Watson, as Mitch Trubisky, as Patrick Mahomes, et cetera. And so in that regard, you got to like what the 49ers were able to pull off.
Well, gosh, yeah, for the what's going to be, what, the 33rd or 34th overall pick.
The Browns will find a way to make it the 34th pick, but we'll see.
Could, either way, it appears it could definitely turn out to be a pittance. And I should mention, too, our point man this week on Way We Hear It was Ed Holm, and he's got another good piece, too, on the Patriots side of that deal up at ProFootballWeekly.com, and you should definitely go check that out. Spend just another minute or two on Garoppolo, because, like you said, you saw him firsthand. We both watched him really exceed expectations in Arizona in that start without Gronkowski, without either one or two starting offensive linemen, and he played well that week and then lit up the Dolphins before injuring his shoulder. The things that jump out to me with Garoppolo are the processing speed and frankly just his release, his arm talent. He's got some athleticism too. Those are all things Kyle Shanahan needs in his quarterback, especially for his system. And if you're going to take a risk like this, I think you probably want someone like Kyle Shanahan, because there's not a lot of guys like him that you're going to entrust with the development of kind of this total wild card at this point.
You know, Arthur, I think the one thing that people miss when they try and evaluate quarterbacks is is that Tom Brady isn't Tom Brady because of his body. Peyton Manning isn't Peyton Manning because of his body. Even Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, they're not the players they are or they were and are because of their bodies. It's because of their heads. I mean, they've all got unique physical gifts, but there's hundreds of quarterbacks with similar physical gifts who failed badly. Mm-hmm. And that's the hardest thing to measure. They talk so much about the heart at other positions. At quarterback, you got to worry more about the head than the heart. And what's really intriguing about Garoppolo is if you go back to his career at Eastern Illinois, I don't care what level of ball it was, but you look at his production, and then you look at that little sample size that we got when he was on the field in New England, he appears to have the head for the game. You know, we can rave right now about what Dak Prescott and Deshaun Watson are doing, and we can wonder about Jameis Winston and Mariota and Trubisky and Mahomes, but until they get a body of work where they show that innate feel for the game, that ability to feel pressure without seeing it, that ability to run the clock in their head, that's what makes these guys special. And there are some early indications that Garoppolo has some of that. Also, watching him for 3 days in practice, this kid can spin it. He's got a really nice arm.
And as you just obviously pointed out, Brady, I think he's the GOAT. I mean, if not, he's, you know, two or three on
there's
that
no,
list.
There's no more if not.
Okay,
you look
yes.
at the rings.
Thank you. Just wanted to be sure. And to share that quarterback room with Garoppolo and to watch Brady just on Sunday against maybe the NFL's best, not maybe, Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram right now are the NFL's best edge rush tandem. Brady takes three sacks, but to watch the way that guy had eyes in the back of his head, on the side of his head, just remarkable stuff. He is pretty spry, though, for 42. I got to say, he looks like he's as good a shape as we've ever seen him
well,
in.
Well, Arthur, that's the other piece of this trade that people have to understand. Apparently, Robert Kraft did get involved towards the end, just to make clear what the organizational position was on this. He is not going to be forced into a position where he has to decide to maybe let Tom Brady go. That's what happened with Peyton Manning in right. Indianapolis. It's what happened with Brett Favre. They're not going to let that happen in New England. And with what appears, I can't call it the likelihood, because we have to remember, Manning at 39 or 40, Favre at 40, when it went fast. They mm-hmm. fell right off the back of the hill. But we're seeing no signs of that with Brady. And so you have to, 45, let's not be silly, okay? But another 2 years to 41 and 42.
His deal goes through 2019,
His deal
right?
is through 19.
Yep.
And he wants to play beyond. And believe me, if he's still playing this way in 19,
sure.
they'll find a way
no
to extend
brainer.
Him.
Yep.
But the reality is, as crazy as it seems, they're beginning to get some evidence that he can do this for a couple more years.
Yeah, crazy indeed. It's a lot of fun to watch. I just, you know, it's a treat that we're getting to watch this unfold in front of our eyes. Pro Football Weekly Podcast, we're at about the halfway point. And guys, we normally break down the week's slate. But I think I'm going to take advantage of having Hub in the co-captain chair this week and just keep kind of going on some of this trade deadline stuff, because I'm curious to get your thoughts, Hub, on what the Bills and the Panthers pulled off and old buddies Brandon Bean and Marty Herney, Kelvin Benjamin, the Panthers number one, going to Buffalo in exchange for what I think it turned out to be number third rounders and seventh rounders. And we'll talk Ajayi and the Dolphins and the Eagles here in a minute too, but that was the one that got done under the wire, unlike the Browns Bengals trade. What do you think? The Bills have reloaded their wide receiver position now with Jordan Matthews and Kelvin Benjamin, and they seem to have done it on the cheap with a couple of guys who've never done it before, and Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Jordan Matthews is ever going to be more than a 2.5 or a 3.
Mm-hmm.
But Kelvin Benjamin still appears to have the ability to be a number one. He's got the unique body type. I don't think he'll ever be as good as Sammy Watkins, but he may have a better career, because we don't know if Sammy Watkins is ever going to be healthy, you know.
Yeah.
And they got tired of dealing with that. And it's a fascinating deal, because Ron Rivera's, you know, chief lieutenant is Sean McDermott. The GM in Buffalo was raised in the business by Marty Herney, you know,
right.
And so, you know, there's a lot of knowledge on both sides of this
and
deal.
And they're not looking to, you wouldn't think, to screw each other. They're probably trying
no.
to find a deal that's going to work for both sides, right?
Yeah,
they're not
I mean,
in the same conference.
There's nobody trying to win in this deal. Marty
yeah.
Herney, it doesn't look like he's going to be in the job after this year anyway. I mean, maybe he will, but he's still got an interim tag
will
on him.
Would he be allowed to make a deal like this, Hub? I mean,
I think Jerry Richardson has complete confidence in him,
okay.
and I think there's a good chance that the interim tag could get lifted, but you got to remember, he just got fired, you know, 4 years
right.
ago by the same guy, so
yeah.
so I don't want to try and predict there.
Sure.
But the one thing that does puzzle me a little bit, if I had to pick a winner in this, Kelvin Benjamin was a number one draft choice. Kelvin Benjamin has at times played to the ability of a number one draft choice. They wanted him gone. You know, Devin Funchess is a similar type receiver. They obviously like Funchess more than Benjamin. You know, they want to get Curtis Samuel on the field. You've got Christian McCaffrey, which kind of changes the offense a little bit. But at the end of the day, that they could still only get a 3 and a 7 for a guy that they just used a 1 on 3 years ago. Now, in fairness, he's also got a contract coming up. You know,
and he's got a I don't know if it's fair to call it chronic, but there is concern about his left knee that was torn up two weeks ago and has been barking at him in recent weeks. And there was the conditioning issue. So there are a few things off the field that factor into this equation as well.
Which is exactly where I was going. So I'm really hesitant to pick a winner here, or maybe I should say to pick a loser. Mm-hmm. But I obviously the Panthers believe that they couldn't have gotten more for Benjamin. This was the time to move. So I think you got to probably call this one a win-win.
It's been fun to watch Buffalo. Remember, one of two teams along with the Jets that everyone thought actually might be tanking going into the season. We kind of laughed at that because NFL teams don't tank. But nonetheless, they were viewed as dealing with a very short deck. And now they're one game off the Patriots' pace in the AFC East and have went from seemingly rebuilding to suddenly going for it. That's pretty cool to see.
It is, but I would caution everybody. To me, they are screaming out as this year's Dolphins or Raiders. I mean, a lot. They're playing well. Some things are going right, but when in doubt, always go back and study the roster. Mm-hmm. This is a team that is still not loaded with frontline talent. And so, yeah, McDermott may turn out to be the next Vince Lombardi. I don't know. You know, we'll wait and see. But at the end of the day, they're on a roll right now. I would watch them closely the second half of the season and then where they come back next year.
And I'm sure they're just kind of assessing the NFL landscape, which is mediocrity, and the AFC in particular. I mean, I know they have both head-to-head against the Patriots, and the Steelers are starting to show their teeth, but who after that is scares you in the AFC?
When Buffalo went into Atlanta and knocked them off, we were all saying, whoa. Mm-hmm. Now 4 weeks later, we're looking at that and saying, well, I guess it wasn't such a big deal. You know, right. So that's the kind of stuff you got to measure here.
Strange days in the NFL. He's Hub Arkish. I am Arthur Arkish. A few minutes left on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, and that works out well because there's a few deals left to get to. We didn't really react to it much on the website, I don't think. What about Marcell Dareus? Since we're sticking with the Bills for just another minute, goes to Jacksonville. The Jaguars will spend whatever it takes, apparently, because that is a huge contract that they absorbed and Buffalo got off its plate. Your thoughts on that? Not a real reliable guy, but has shown he can be dominant if the light bulb is flashed on.
Well, and that's where you go back to, is Buffalo going for it, or are they retooling? Because they unloaded the contract.
But look what the defense was doing with Dareus not even playing a ton, right?
I know. And again, I think McDermott's doing he's a defensive coordinator. He's doing a great job with him. There's no question about that. And Kyle Williams, for a decade, has been the most underrated player in the league.
Right.
You know, it's not like they don't have any talent there. But obviously Jacksonville continues to manage their cap well to constantly have this amount of space, and they didn't give up much for him, and Dareus can be a game wrecker, mm-hmm. you know, and Jacksonville's another team that appears to be going for it a little bit. So in this one, I got to give the edge to the Jaguars. I think if they get 3 or 4 Marcell Dareus-type games out of the last 8. Because right now, Calais Campbell is the best 5 technique in football. They've got these kids. Ramsey's coming on. Dante Fowler Jr. is back on the field. This has a chance to be a really special defense. And to add a piece like that, and generally what happens with these veterans is you put them in that situation and they feed off it. And it becomes that much more of a difference maker. So I'd give the edge in that deal to the Jaguars.
We got one big one left. Jay Ajayi, maybe the most shocking of the bunch. Jay Ajayi, in his second year in Miami, is the 4th leading rusher in the NFL. He goes from a healthy scratch in week 1. This is in 2016, who was actually left home from the trip to Seattle by Adam Gase, to, again, going on and being number 2 in the AFC rushing, number 4 in the NFL, had 3 200-yard rushing performances. It just wasn't clicking this year, either on or off the field with his coaching staff, so he gets sent to Philadelphia, of all teams, the 7-1 Eagles, with already, I think, the number 3 or 4 rushing attack in the NFL, number 1 in time of possession, have LeGarrette Blount and some young guys they kind of like too. And I believe it was for a 4th rounder. Ajayi was normally a 5th round pick in 2015 of the previous regime in Miami. So kind of a lot to unpack here. And this, of course, comes right after Adam Gase is just throwing his whole offense under the bus to the media after they got shut out last Thursday in Baltimore. Said this stinks. The running backs aren't taking what's there for them. These guys aren't paying enough attention to detail. And did he find a scapegoat? Did he find the guy that really was the problem and needed to be removed from the equation? This is a fascinating one, Hub.
Well, I don't think getting rid of Jay Ajayi fixes anything.
They're not better today than they were yesterday.
But I do have sources in Miami who tell me that he was a guy that they were not disappointed to get out of the locker room. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you start to, as you say, unpack it, and you go back to being a healthy scratch after being a top pick of the team, albeit with a new coach. Then you look at last year, over 1,100 yards rushing, but he had over 600 yards rushing in three games.
Yep.
And just barely not quite 500 yards rushing in the other 12 games he did dress for.
Right.
So
right.
Something's going on there. And then there may have been a little bit of the let's find a scapegoat thing here. But at the end of the day, I think they felt there's no way he was going to be part of a successful future. So let's take what we can get now and move on. Let's look at these kids behind him who got a couple kids who aren't special, but they're interesting and they'll get a better look.
Kenyon Drake, the third rounder from Alabama, the guy that Adam Gase and Dennis Hickey did pick, you would assume will get the first crack at it. They also
got rare speed. You know,
who watched the national championship game, his return kickoff a couple years ago, saw that. Also Damian Williams, more of a journeyman guy who's pushing 30. So we'll see how that running back mix kind of plays out. And we should add, too, Jay Ajayi, he was one of the top prospects at his position in the 2015 draft, but there were concerns over his knees.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't ignore that and the factor it may have played in this deal. What about for the Eagles, Hub? Howie Roseman, everyone was screaming from the mountaintop for him to address his backfield last offseason. Weren't able to run in Carson Wentz's rookie year, and he waited, and he shot the bargain rack, and he found LeGarrette Blount in June. And LeGarrette Blount's done a pretty good job, good enough for them to be, you know, whatever. You guys, they're 7-1, and the offense has been great. But now you get a potential feature guy, and they're probably looking, do you think, as much toward next year as this year? I mean, how do you see it from the Eagles side of things?
Well, I'll tell you, I am not a huge fantasy football guy. I love it. I think it's great and I understand why other people love it. The reason I don't like it is because I get so busy about 3-4 times a year, I forget to submit my starting lineup.
You say Howie Roseman is playing fantasy football?
No. I'm going somewhere else here.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that LeGarrette Blount, in spite of the fact that I don't take it seriously, has made a lot of money for me the last few years. I am a big LeGarrette Blount fan. Ironically, he and Ajayi coming from the same school, and Blount also a guy who throughout his past has had some issues, which may be the reason he hasn't really been able to stick anywhere. He has won a ton of games for Bill Belichick, and yet he's cut and re-signed him, I think, 3 times before finally letting him go. And so
he was available in June.
Yeah, and so I thought that it was a brilliant move by Roseman when he did it. This one, I don't know that I want to take the ball away from Blount to give it to Ajayi or Wendell Smallwood for that matter, but we'll see. It certainly isn't bad to add these kind of reinforcements when you're 7-1 with the best record in the NFL.
Yeah, and we should point out that while both of those guys, both Blount and Ajayi, I mean, they probably now form the most physically imposing backfield in the NFL. These are guys that will run over you and do it with a smile on their face. But LeGarrette Blount doesn't give you anything in the passing game, so that's why that's where they try and mix in Wendell Smallwood. And actually, it was Corey Clement, the undrafted kid out of Wisconsin, who seemed to have surpassed Wendell Smallwood on the pecking order last week. But this is a fascinating one, and the Eagles don't have a lot of weaknesses. Just a great move for them, I think.
And Blount and Ajayi also are two guys who will occasionally put the ball on the ground.
Yep.
I think what Roseman probably saw here was a bargain buy. I mean, he for what he gave up.
Yep.
He got talent worth the price, and why not get reinforcements?
And we know Howie Roseman loves to make deals. Look to Carson Wentz or Ronald Darby. I mean, the list goes on with all the deals he's made of late. Mike Tannenbaum also loves to make deals, so that part wasn't a surprise either. And these guys, just last offseason with Kiko Alonso and Byron Maxwell, clearly the phone lines are open. Just about 1 or 2 minutes left on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I think we hit on all the big trades at the deadline. Hub, is there one game maybe that jumps out at you? This is not a real exciting Week 9 slate, in my opinion, but anything you're really anxious to see this week, whether maybe it's the Falcons going into Carolina, Cincinnati, Jacksonville, I suppose, is kind of interesting, and the Chiefs and the Cowboys at the risk of, I don't really want to discuss Zeke Elliott's status because it'll probably change by the time you guys hear this podcast, but the Chiefs coming off a big win and the Cowboys seem to kind of be at potential crossroads here, hosting Kansas City at Jerry World Sunday.
Yeah, the two games that jump out at me the most are Kansas City at Dallas, because I've been fascinated by the Chiefs all year long, and they seem to get back on track last week after a couple shaky performances. And I look at the Cowboys, who are the only team with a chance to give the Eagles a run for their money. And yet now you've got all the uncertainty. Will Zeke get another injunction between kickoff and our taping this podcast? The popular consensus was no, but that's what we thought the last time. If he doesn't, is it Alfred Morris? Is it Darren McFadden? Can either one of them pick up the slack? How much of a distraction is it? So, you know, you've got two really good football teams. If Elliott is on the field, it's even more interesting. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Dallas surprised me. They went into Washington last week and played their best game of the year. This could be it's going to be a fascinating matchup whether Elliott is there or not. And the other game that really interests me is one you didn't mention, which is Detroit going to Green Bay. It's the Monday night game, because it would appear that one of those two teams may be the only one with a chance to catch the Vikings, and I'm not sure either one can. I mean, the Green Bay Packers still have plenty of talent, but without Aaron Rodgers, it's a whole different ballgame, and it's really unfair to put it all on Brett Hundley, because it's not all on Brett Hundley, but can he even do enough to give him a chance to be competitive? They've got this exciting rookie running back, Aaron Jones, but if Hundley continues to struggle, you can bet defenses are going to stack to take away Jones. And then I look at the Lions, who I never understood how they got to the playoffs last year, got off to 3-0 start this year, but they're struggling now. To me, they may be playing down to where they really belong, but if they go into Lambeau here and get another win, you know, suddenly they're the team with the best chance to chase down the Vikings.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one on Monday night. Detroit, it's mostly been a horror show for them in the state of Wisconsin, just one win, but it did come 2 years ago, and that was against Aaron Rodgers, so that one will be interesting. The only thing I would add to that Chiefs-Cowboys game, and then we'll get out of here, is this is the opportunity for Dak to show that he can put a team on his shoulders, because, you know, I'm not taking anything away from what he's accomplished, but he's done it all with Zeke. So that would make this fascinating. And I would just say on the Chiefs, you said they kind of figured things out in their big win over the Broncos. Yes and no. I feel like the turnovers that they forced in that game kind of covered up some of the struggles that this defense is still dealing with. So I believe Kansas City still has some things to sort out defensively. But, those will be both interesting games for sure. I know we'll have an eye on.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see the Packers more than anything, because they've lost two straight, and this one I think is going to have to define them. They've had the bye week to get Hundley ready.
Right.
This Monday night we find out if Green Bay is done for the year or if they've got a chance to rally and maybe become a factor again.
I tend to think it's going to be the latter, but we'll just have to wait and see. It'll be a lot of fun on Monday night. Hub Arcus will be on the sidelines for Westwood One doing that game. Make sure you check it out. Make sure you check us out on iTunes, the Pro Football Weekly podcast. He is Hub Arcus. I am Arthur Arcus. Dan Mott producing us today, and we hope you guys enjoy the Week 9 slate. Thank you once more to our great sponsor, Loot Crate, as well. We'll talk to you guys again next week.